Welcome to the My Virtual HR Radio Show with your host, Robert Redden. My Virtual HR, affordable outsourced HR support for smaller businesses in England and Wales.
Welcome to show number 12 of the My Virtual HR Radio Show. In today's show, I will be looking at two topics that have been highlighted in recent employment tribunal cases. The first topic is on the subject of discriminatory comments about an employee's disability. This is another case of who had actual or deemed knowledge of an employee's disability and can be contrasted with the case of Gallup against Newport City Council, which was discussed in show number 11 of the My Virtual HR Radio Show. In the second of our topics for today, I will be looking at investigating emails sent by an employee and whether the right to privacy under Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights is engaged in the context of a disciplinary investigation. But before getting into today's topics, I would like to say a few words about My Virtual HR. My Virtual HR, www.myvirtualhr.co.uk, is a membership website providing affordable, outsourced HR support for smaller businesses. Members have access to over 200 pages of premium content organized into a convenient A to Z format. There are also answers to frequently asked HR questions, breaking news section, articles, videos, key employment data, and much more. New content is continuously being added. Membership is from less than 24 pence a day. Members can also buy employment contracts, employee handbooks, template letters, HR forms, and HR consultancy, all at affordable prices. In the first of our topics for today, I will be looking at the recent tribunal decision in Wickers and Colchester Vision Plus Limited trading as Specsavers opticians, which concerned dismissive comments made by a director about an employee's medical condition instead of considering whether or not she had a disability. This is the background to the case. Ms. Wickers worked as an optical assistant at Specsavers. Her employment performance was satisfactory until she was required to work on the shop floor in early 2014. Ms. Wickers was not comfortable with this arrangement because she had found direct customer interaction difficult. Her employment performance deteriorated over the next few months. She received some formal and informal warnings for a variety of matters, including failure to comply with the employer's absence notification procedure, lateness, and for a dispensing error. She also had short periods of self-certified sickness absence. In June 2014, Ms. Wickers became tearful during her appraisal with the director, and he advised that she should see her GP. In July 2014, following a further period of sickness absence, Ms. Wickers told the director that she was in fact struggling with depression. The employment tribunal found that he responded by saying that he had no sympathy for this kind of thing. He went on to say that everyone gets depressed sometimes, you just have to pull yourself together. Matters did not improve and Ms. Wickers had further days off sick and received another warning for a dispensing error in September 2014. On the 28th of November, Ms. Wickers was again late for work and the director decided to deal with the matter himself. He called her into his office and, despite the fact that she was visibly distressed, told her he would proceed straight to a disciplinary action. The director did not ask Ms. Wickers why she had been late, and when she told him she was on medication and had been diagnosed with depression, he did not pause the conversation, nor did he make any further inquiry into her condition. The director told Ms. Wickers that dismissal was a likely outcome, although not the only possible one. Ms. Wickers interpreted this as meaning that she would be dismissed if she did not resign. Ms. Wickers decided to resign, and the director accepted her letter of resignation. Ms. Wickers brought a claim in the Employment Tribunal for disability discrimination, failure by her employer to make reasonable adjustments, and harassment. Specsavers subsequently conceded that Ms. Wickers' history of depression satisfied the statutory definition of disability. Given that the parties agreed that Ms. Wickers was suffering from a disability, the issue for the Employment Tribunal was whether or not Specsavers had constructive knowledge of Ms. Wickers' disability during the relevant period. This was important because Specsavers would not be liable for discrimination arising from a disability if it could not reasonably have known that she was a disabled person. The tribunal noted that Ms. Wickers had not divulged her treatment for depression as fully as she should have done, and she had not indicated that her sickness absences were due to her depression. However, in the tribunal's view, after Ms. Wickers' conversation with the director in July and the discussions she had in the course of the disciplinary proceedings in September 2014, Specsavers did know or could reasonably be expected to know that Ms. Wickers had a disability. Having made this finding, the tribunal focused on the allegations made by Ms. Wickers about matters that took place after Specsavers had knowledge of her disability. The tribunal found the employer had constructive knowledge of the claimant's disability, and the comments amounted to discrimination arising from her disability. In particular, the employment tribunal found that the director's comments in July 2014 were due to his unsympathetic approach to mental illness and was discrimination arising from disability. Ms. Wickers was also subjected to discrimination arising from disability in respect of her resignation. Ms. Wickers had been late on the day in question because she had overslept due to her medication, and the effect of the medication on her sleep was something arising from her disability. On the claim for failure to make reasonable adjustments, the tribunal found that it would have been a reasonable adjustment for Specsavers to have stopped the disciplinary meeting and allowed Ms. Wickers time to reflect. This case can be distinguished from Gallup and Newport City Council, which we discussed and commented upon in show 11 of the My Virtual HR radio show. In that case, the question for the Employment Tribunal and the Employment Appeal Tribunal on the subsequent appeal was whether the knowledge of Mr. Gallup's condition as known by Occupational Health could be imputed to the dismissing officer. They found that it could not. Whereas in this case, the director who conducted the disciplinary meeting knew or ought to have known that Ms. Wickers was suffering from a disability because she had told him she was struggling with depression, and he had dismissed her mental condition by saying that he had no sympathy for this type of thing, and that everyone gets depressed sometimes, you just have to pull yourself together. This case is a reminder that employers are required to conduct a reasonable investigation, which was not done in this case, follow a fair disciplinary procedure, which was not done in this case, take reasonable steps to ascertain whether or not an employee is disabled. The employer should have inquired about the employee's health and obtained medical evidence when it first became aware that the employee might be suffering from a disability. Having been made aware that the employee was suffering from a disability, or the company ought to have known that, to comply with the legal obligation to make reasonable adjustments. In the case of a disciplinary meeting, that could include adjourning the meeting. It is also a reminder of the benefit of conducting a return-to-work interview after every period of absence of, for example, more than half a day. Employers should also try to ascertain the real reason why an employee is late for work, especially if he or she is late several times.
You're listening to the My Virtual HR radio show.
In the second of today's topics, I will be looking at whether, in the context of a disciplinary investigation and any subsequent related disciplinary meeting, an employer can investigate an employee's emails and whether the employee has a right to privacy in them under Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights. Can an employee have a reasonable expectation to privacy in emails that they send to and from their employer's email system? In other words, is Article 8, the right to privacy under the European Convention on Human Rights, engaged? The answer depends on to whom the emails were sent, whether they could potentially have an impact on any part of the employer's business, and whether they were work-related. In other words, it depends on the facts of each case. The recent case of Garamu Anwar against Solent NHS Trust is an example. This is the background to that case. The claimant was a clinical manager for the trust. He formed a personal relationship with a staff nurse, Ms. McLean. The claimant then suspected that Ms. McLean had formed a relationship with a female colleague called Ms. Smith. He resented this. Anonymous malicious emails were sent from various fictional email addresses to management. Ms. McLean also became concerned that the claimant was now harassing and stalking her. The employer investigated and concluded there were items on the claimant's iPhone which implicated him and linked him to the anonymous emails. He was dismissed for gross misconduct. His claim for unfair dismissal failed. In the course of the Employment Tribunal proceedings, he unsuccessfully argued that the employer had acted in breach of Article 8 by examining matters related purely or essentially to his private life. The Employment Tribunal rejected this. It considered that Article 8 was not engaged on account that the emails had a potential impact on work and dealt with at least in part with work-related matters. The Employment Appeal Tribunal agreed. It relied on the guidance of the Court of Appeal in the case of X against Y on the impact of convention rights in unfair dismissal cases. The first question always to be asked is whether the circumstances of the dismissal fall within the ambit of one or more of the articles of the convention. Unless they do, the rights are not engaged and need not be considered further. Article 8 does protect private correspondence and communications, and, potentially, email sent at work where there is a reasonable expectation of privacy. However, here the emails had impacted on work-related matters, and the emails were sent to work addresses of the recipients. They distressed colleagues, potentially affecting their work, and the claimant's judgment as a manager was rightly to be examined. These were all features that entitled the Employment Tribunal to conclude that Article 8 was not engaged and therefore not relevant because the claimant had no reasonable expectation of privacy in respect of such communications. Does this apply to private sector employers? The Human Rights Act only provides that public bodies must comply with the European Convention on Human Rights. Solent NHS Trust is a public body, thus the question of how Article 8, the right to privacy, should be treated was a relevant consideration. Should the convention rights be applied in private sector cases? There is no direct authority on this point. However, in the case of X against Y mentioned earlier, a majority of the Court of Appeal stated that there should be no difference in approach whether the employer is private sector or public sector, and described the effect of the European Convention on Human Rights as oblique rather than horizontal. So what's the takeaway for employers? Employers will mainly inquire into emails sent by an employee as part of a disciplinary investigation. Care needs to be taken to identify those emails that have nothing to do with the employer's business and are not work-related or do not have an impact on any part of the employer's business. Such emails are likely to be covered by Article 8 and should be treated as private. Where an employee sends emails to colleagues' business email addresses, whether or not he or she uses their employer's email system to do so, and those communications are related to some part of the employer's business and or have a potential impact on the employer's business, then those emails are unlikely to be covered by Article 8 and the employee should have no expectation of privacy in them. Such emails can be used as evidence in a disciplinary investigation and any subsequent disciplinary meeting. If you are using a My Virtual HR Employment Handbook, the IT policy specifically states that all emails sent using the employer's IT equipment, as well as those sent from personal equipment whilst on the employer's business, are the property of the employer and that the employee cannot expect any such communications to be private.
You're listening to the My Virtual HR Radio Show.
In today's show, I have been discussing two topics that can cause difficulties for employers. Both of these cases were reported in the breaking news section of our website. To increase the value of not only our breaking news section, but our entire membership website, My Virtual HR has launched a newsletter that will be sent to all members. The newsletter will tell members of new additions to the My Virtual HR website, new breaking news stories, and much more. This is a members-only service. In the next edition of the My Virtual HR radio show, I will be looking at more employment-related issues of importance to employers. I'm Robert Reddin from My Virtual HR, www.myvirtualhr.co.uk. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to seeing you in the next show.
You have been listening to the My Virtual HR radio show. Today's show was written and presented by Robert Reddin. Music was by Kevin MacLeod. My Virtual HR, affordable outsourced HR support. For more information, visit our website, www.myvirtualhr.co.uk.